Welcome to The Extra, the show that connects you with the issues, people, and topics that are important to you. And today we're talking about, we're talking about something that is very close to all of us. We're talking about the mental health impact of COVID-19, because we know when it comes to the coronavirus pandemic, the mental health impact is of increasing concern. In addition to the direct effects on the brain, the COVID-19 pandemic is causing unprecedented psychological distress, threatening a crashing wave of mental health problems, according to a study published in Psychology Today. Their study found that nearly a third of a group study, 28%, reported elevated rates of anxiety and depression, disproportionately elevated compared to how many had actually been touched by getting coronavirus or having someone in their family who had it. The same percentage, clinically significant anxiety was reported, with about that same number reporting high levels of depression and anxiety. And in the meantime, we also know that there are ways that we can improve our chances against coronavirus. We can get plenty of sleep. We can boost our immunities. But did you know that you can also help protect yourself by bringing about stress relief from laughter? It turns out that when it comes to relieving stress, more joking around may be just what the doctor ordered. And that's why today our guest is a 29-time Emmy Award-winning humor producer, Bill Stanton, based out of Seattle, Washington. Mr. Stanton, thank you so much for joining me here on The Extra today.
It's my pleasure to be with you, Shannon. How are you doing?
Doing just fine. And for those of you who have ever lived in Seattle, you know the show, the long-running show, Almost Live, a winner of numerous Emmy Awards. And that's where, Mr. Stanton, you got your start producing humor. So how did you come to see humor to be kind of your way of life, kind of your career?
Well, it's interesting, you know, when I got the job, by the way, call me Bill, please. When I got the job, when we decided to start this comedy show, I was just a TV producer. I mean, I understood comedy. I grew up watching Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In and Monty Python's Flying Circus and, you know, the early days of Saturday Night Live, which began in 1975, you know, all that sort of thing. So I was kind of schooled in comedy, but had never really made it a career. But it's interesting, once it does become a career, once we started Almost Live, and that became a weekly show, and you know, and we had to write comedy every week, once that becomes kind of a part of your life, it becomes a habit. You look at everything through that lens, you know, and I'm sure that you and your listeners have had this experience also. Let's say you buy a new car, and this is the classic example. You know, maybe not a brand new car, but it's new for you. You know, you buy an Elantra or something like that. You know, a blue Elantra, and you drive it off the lot, and all of a sudden you realize, oh my goodness, every other car on the road is a blue Elantra. Well, it's not, of course, and they were there before, but now it's on your radar. And so when comedy, when humor is on your radar, when you're looking for it like I had to every week for 15 years, the show ran for 15 years, it kind of becomes the first filter that everything goes through. And when you look for humor in situations, you find it. I mean, basically, you find whatever you look for in a situation. If you look for something that's going to make you angry, heaven knows there's plenty out there right now. If you look for something that's going to make you sad, it's out there. So if our brain is going to focus on what we look for, why not take a break at least a few times a day and try and look for something funny and uplifting?
And that's something that's actually good for our health, because when you look up like the stats on humor and how humor can help us physically, our health, it stimulates our organs, it enhances our intake of oxygen-rich air, which then stimulates our heart and our lungs and our muscles. It releases more endorphins from our brain. It brings down our stress response. So there are all very good physiological reasons to embrace humor, even during such a dire time when, you know, 200,000 Americans have died.
Right. Boy, that was a weird left turn segue at the end. I was prepared to say something funny, then you turned.
It's a serious thing, and that's, I think, it makes it so difficult. It does make it so difficult to look for humor and try to use humor during this time.
But you know, it can be done. Here's a trick that I learned from David Letterman. Not that he and I were sitting down together having a cup of coffee talking about it, but except for most of your younger listeners, most people remember 9/11, of course. And when that happened, it was this horrible tragedy. Unlike COVID, which is kind of this spreading tragedy. I mean, this was an event, and it shell shocked the nation, shell shocked the world, but certainly the nation. And as a student of comedy, I was watching the late night shows because I was curious, professionally curious, to see how they're going to react to it. And for the first several days, maybe up to a week, they didn't really do anything funny, because it seemed inappropriate. And that's kind of where we are now. It's like, how do you make jokes about the fact that, as you say, over 210,000 Americans have now died from this, another 7 million or however many million it is have it, and who knows what the long-term health repercussions might be. How in the world do you find humor in that? Well, that's the challenge that the late-night hosts were facing after 9/11. What do we do? Because at a certain point, we have to address it. It's our job. How do we address it? And here's what I got from Letterman, because he figured it out. He and his writers figured it out. That if it's a tragic situation, one that's really affecting everybody deeply, you don't find a joke in the situation itself. You find the humor in the periphery of the situation. Let me give you an example of what I mean. Letterman's first joke coming back, when he started making jokes again, was not about planes flying into buildings. It was not about terrorism. It was not about any religious thing. His jokes were about how it's amazing that this is bringing us all together. Even the cabbies in New York are nice. And then he made some cab jokes, some New York taxi cab jokes. Now, these were pretty standard jokes, but because he gave it that veneer, that context of, look, everybody's joining together, it kind of, for lack of a better term, it kind of creates the illusion that he's addressing the situation that happened. He's addressing 9/11, but he's doing it with the peripheral parts of it, which are kind of safe. It's like with COVID, one of the things that people are doing, and you see the ads every place, are funny masks. Masks that look like cats or dogs or have funny sayings on them or things like that. So there are things that you can look for that are kind of not directly the issue, but kind of surrounding the issue. Does that make sense?
Right. And certainly, a parent's dilemma. Parents, I think, have been ready to tear their hair out when it comes to handling their kids' online learning at home, and are so ready to send the kids back to school. And there's a lot to be found funny in that. We love our kids, but it seems that when it comes to teaching our kids at home, that is a task that is, we have newfound respect for our teachers and educators. We have to take a short break. We're going to continue the conversation of finding humor in the pandemic and why it's important to do so, why it's important to embrace that aspect of our lives, of how society continues, because it is important for our health. It does bring health benefits to us as long as we can look for the lighter side in life, even in such a serious time. And my guest today, Bill Stanton, award-winning comedian as well as Hall of Fame public speaker. We'll be talking about that career shift a little bit later on. But first, you're listening to The Extra here on KRDO News Radio. A quick break for messages. And welcome back to The Extra, the show connecting you with the issues, topics, and people that are important to you. And today, the topic we're tackling and the issue is really how to maintain a sense of humor and to tap into it at a time when we're all dealing with the mental stresses brought on by the coronavirus pandemic and just the stresses of life. And my guest today is a 20-time Emmy Award winner and Hall of Fame keynote speaker, Bill Stainton, who's also an expert on innovation, creativity, and breakthrough thinking. And Bill used to work on a comedy show called Almost Live, based in the Seattle area. But since then, he has come to be a certified speaking professional who helps leaders and teams come up with innovative solutions on demand to their most challenging problems. So, Bill, we're going to talk about that career change, how that shift was brought about for you, and you know, how you've embraced this new world that I'm sure has been impacted by coronavirus as well. But first, let's go back. You and I, we actually have a personal connection. We worked for the same TV station, King of Five, which was the home of Almost Live. And also, we had a personal friendship that extended long past that time together. But in addition to us working together, you on your show had colleagues that a lot of our listeners might know about, might recognize. Tell us about a few of them.
Well, that's true. There were a few who kind of broke out and made it big. I'm sure that some of your listeners may have heard of my friend Bill Nye, otherwise known as Bill Nye the Science Guy.
We've heard of him, just a little.
Yeah, we actually invented Bill Nye on our show. We were in desperate straits one Saturday. We taped our show in front of a live studio audience on Saturday nights, and we had a guest cancel the day of the show. Didn't know what we were going to do. Like, oh, we need a guest. We need a guest. And, like, everybody was out of town. The Seahawks were out of town. It's just, you know, we couldn't find anybody, and we're panicking. And, you know, we're sitting around the table trying to come up with guests. And Bill Nye, who at that time was my lowest paid writer, pops his head up and said, well, maybe I could do something with liquid nitrogen. And the rest of us is like, shut up, Bill. The grown-ups are trying to solve a problem. You know, like I said, he's the lowest paid writer, which is interesting. You know, we really discount the ideas of those who we consider somewhat inferior, even because, you know, maybe because they're new or because they're quiet or, you know, for whatever reason. We tend to discount their ideas. So we're just like, oh, Bill, be quiet. But, you know, the clock kept ticking. And finally it was like, okay, Bill. In fact, it was our host at the time, Ross Schaefer, who lives in Colorado, said, well, hang on. Okay, look, we're getting nowhere. Bill, tell us about this stupid liquid nitrogen idea of yours. And that's when Bill Nye started telling us about it. Well, you know, it's very cold. I could put a marshmallow in the liquid nitrogen, pop it in my mouth, bite down, smoke comes out of my nose and mouth. I'm like, well, that sounds kind of cool. And we thought, well, we've got nothing to lose. So we threw him on the air, and he became a hit.
So, the star is born. Throw a marshmallow.
The star is born, but it's also a great lesson, you know, like, look, the good ideas can come from anywhere. Other people, there's a guy named Joel McHale. If you ever watched the sitcom Community, Joel was the star of Community. He's been in movies and other TV shows along the line. He was the host of The Soup on E!
Oh, yeah. He's been in lots of movies. I think he was in a Spider-Man movie. He's a big, big star.
He was in a Spider-Man movie. He was a banker that turned down...
Alone, I think. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah, he was in that, and that was when all of a sudden Dr. Octopus breaks in or something like that.
Yeah, TJR producer. He knew exactly who we were talking about. That's right. Yeah. So a lot of funny people. I know,
yeah,
Bob
Joel
Nelson.
My intern.
Yeah, he was your intern?
Academy Award nominee. Yeah, Joel McHale was my intern. He used to be my intern. Nothing quite like seeing your intern far surpass you professionally.
Now he's walking the red carpet, and I think he's even hosted award shows. He's done all sorts of things.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. But you've done a lot of stuff too, and we're going to be talking.
but your picture is nice too.
Hey,
Vinci's little less talented brother. No, we'll put yours up on the fridge.
You cannot equate the two. Joel McHale went to Hollywood. You've done a difference.
Around like $15 million.
Yeah.
I'm not, but still.
You've taken a different sort of journey.
Refrigerator.
a different sort of journey, but always looking for the laughs and everything. That's what everyone around you loves about you, Bill. And I think that's why it's so interesting to me that we've become such a serious people. I mean, I think for the first month or two that this was going on, I don't think I laughed about anything. I certainly didn't laugh on the air. Things just seemed too stark, you know, and when you're, you know, doing grocery shopping and going to the stores and it feels like you're in some sort of zombie apocalypse movie, you know, because there's nothing on the shelves, it really, I think, changed our mentality around. We got very serious all of a sudden.
We did, because there was a lot at stake. And also, it was like, is it appropriate? Is it appropriate? I mean, that's the question that we've all been thinking about. You know, Donald Trump gets COVID, goes to Walter Reed. Is it appropriate? Is there anything funny about that? I'm here to tell you, no matter what your politics are, there's always something funny if you look for it. There's always, now maybe you don't want to broadcast it necessarily, but there's always something. You and I both know, and your listeners too, we all know somebody, either close or peripherally, who is a first responder, either in healthcare or the police or firefighting or something like that. Well, if you know people like that, if you have people like that in your life, you know that when they get together, they joke about the most serious things, because they have to. They have to be able to laugh about these things, because otherwise it would just eat them alive.
It's a coping mechanism, essentially, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's a coping mechanism, and we need to give ourselves that permission. We need to give ourselves... Even if we're not sure, okay, maybe you don't post everything online because there might be consequences or something, but we need to give ourselves personally, because our first responsibility is to ourselves. Especially if you're a parent, give yourself permission to find the humor, because if you don't find it, you can't help those around you. Before we went to break last time, you talked about homeschooling and how that's an issue kind of on the periphery of the whole COVID thing. During the break, I just Googled homeschooling funny. And just with that one thing, there's enough stuff to keep you laughing for a week or more. So it's out there. The humor's out there if people just give themselves permission to look for it. And I'm just here to tell you that it's okay to laugh. Not only is it okay to laugh, it's our responsibility to laugh.
I'll take that. Our responsibility. It's not even an obligation. It's our patriotic responsibility. Let's make it.
It is our patriotic duty, because if we're... One of the things that I found, if you can laugh together, if you get Democrats and Republicans laughing together, if you get any, and I just say that because obviously we're in the middle of a whole political thing now, but if you're in a work group and you're disagreeing about something, if you can start laughing together about it, that changes the context of the situation, and you're more likely to find a solution and find common ground, because no matter what anybody says, it is true that we have more common ground than not. I mean, you know, we are human beings. We may have different political views, we may have different religious views, we may have different views on this and that, but at our core, there is more in common than not, and humor helps tap into that commonality. Because the only way we can laugh together at something is if we both see the humor in it. And that's why laughter is such a bridge. It can bridge us together.
Right.
It's a great tool, and it's absolutely vital right now.
Our producer, TJ, his form of humor, every day he wears a funny comedy shirt. It's some sort of joke. It's usually a visual joke, usually involving dinosaurs. And that is his way of always keeping things light here around the news radio station. Hey, we have to take a break. Bill Stanton is my guest, 29-time Emmy Award winner and Hall of Fame keynote speaker. And we're talking about tapping into humor, but we're also going to be in our next segment talking about looking for ways to innovate and using this time to maybe change around our thinking. That's coming up as The Extra continues. Welcome back to The Extra, the show connecting you with issues, topics, and people that are important to you. And today, the topic that we're discussing is looking to humor to help relieve stress, to help boost our physiology during the pandemic when we are feeling low, when we're feeling run down, when we're feeling a higher level of anxiety as we navigate this new normal. And my guest today is a 29-time Emmy Award-winning producer and Hall of Fame keynote speaker, Bill Stanton, joining us, telling us about ways to look for humor and why humor is always appropriate in some form or fashion. We just need to look for the ways to apply it, the ways to look for it, and to keep being on the lookout for it, it sounds like, Bill, because it sounds like if you are keeping humor on your horizon, you will find it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, whatever you look for, and we talked about this a little bit before, whatever you look for, it's there. It's, you know, this is a big world. There's a lot out there. If you look for frustration, it's out there. If you look for anger, it's out there. If you look for love, compassion, and humor, those are all out there too. So the key is that we are in charge of what we look for, not Facebook, not the news, no offense, we are in charge of what we look for. Yes, we should stay informed, all that sort of thing, but at least a few times a day, take a break and look for the fun, the funny, the heartwarming, because again, it is out there, especially in times of upheaval.
And this
because
is a
like this kind of bring out the best and the worst, and the best is out there.
And this is a very, like you mentioned, this is a time of increased upheaval, probably the most that any of us have ever experienced in our lifetime outside of those who went to war. When you're talking about such a serious time, there are some changes that people are experiencing, changes because of job loss, changes because of, family issues. When we're talking about such difficult times, is it also time to change ourselves?
Well, it's a good time to change ourselves. One of the things that I've found in my research and my reading and things is that times of upheaval are perfect times for reinvention and innovation, because the boundaries are down. The rule book has been thrown out, and we know that. I mean, the rule book of what it means to go to school, of what it means to go to work, of what it means to be healthy or not be healthy. I mean, so many rule books are out of what it means to be social. Social now is Zoom as opposed to, getting together, in some cases, depending on the restrictions and that sort of thing. But still, it's on our mind. And when the rules have been thrown out, that's a perfect time to start thinking about, okay, what are the new rules? I mean, how are we going to come out of this? What are we going to look like when we come out of this? And how am I preparing myself now for the reality that's going to be, in the tail end of this? Because none of us knows what that reality is really going to look like. But what can we do now to prepare for it? And the best thing we can do to prepare for it is to kind of learn those skills of innovation, of creativity, of being able to turn on a dime, of being able to take whatever the situation is and turn it to our advantage, not in a, Machiavellian way, but just to be able to make the best of whatever the situation is. Because in any situation, there are people who come out of it just glowing, and there are people who get defeated by it. Mm. And to a larger extent than we tend to realize, that really is a function more of our attitude going into it than it is about the actual circumstances that surround us. More often than not.
But there are people out there, I'm sure, listening who say, and I count myself among them sometimes, it's like, I'm not sure I'm an innovator. I'm not sure I'm one of those take charge kind of people. Is there a way to, I guess, flip our thinking so that, we can do more of that?
Sure. And you really hit the nail on the head, Shannon, because, a lot of people, here's what happens. Because we're not used to innovating, because most of us aren't in jobs. Now, for 15 years, I was in a job that required constant innovation. We had to be innovative every week on demand because I produced a comedy TV show. So we had to be innovative. Most of us don't have a situation like that, so we're not used to innovating. And just because we're not used to it, we're not all that good at it. Because we're not good at it, we just think, well, I guess I'm just not one of those people. I'm not one of the creative types, We are all innovative and creative. It is the human condition. All innovation really is looking for better ways to do things. You don't have to invent the iPhone or the Tesla or cure cancer to be an innovator. The person who invented the paperclip, That was a great innovation. You know,
genius.
Genius. See, here's what happens. Most of us go through life and we hit a brick wall from time to time, some kind of obstacle. Sometimes it's a big brick wall, like a global pandemic. Sometimes it's a little brick wall, like I can't find my lucky socks, you know, whatever it is. And that's where most of us stop. You know, we curse the brick wall. That's where most of us stop. All the innovator does, the only thing that the innovator does differently is he or she runs up against the brick wall, he or she curses that brick wall, but then the innovator asks one further question, which is, how can I make this better? And
right.
That's what starts unlocking things. When you start thinking, oh, I hate the situation I'm in. Ooh, how can I make it better? If every one of your listeners, whatever their situation is, if they're having trouble with, you know, homeschooling their kids, or they're trying to find a job and not having much luck, or, you know, trying to figure out, okay, how am I going to go to college next year, or whatever the situation is, yes, we can sit around and curse the darkness, and that's appropriate for a time. I mean, we all have to go through kind of that grieving process of, oh, life is not the same, and I don't like it. But then, again, the innovative mind, and again, you don't have to be a Marie Curie or a, you know, Elon Musk or something like that, or a Steve Jobs to be an innovator. You just ask yourself that question. I would challenge every single one of your listeners today to look at some kind of challenge they're facing in their life, big or little. Actually, a little one might be a little easier to start with, but either one works. And just spend 15 minutes asking yourself the question, how can I make this better? Sit down with a piece of paper and a pencil, not in front of your computer, actually, you know, a pen or a pencil and a piece of paper, and come up with at least three answers to that question. Because I promise you the answers are out there. And that starts to get our brain, because our brain will answer whatever question we put to it, or at least it'll try to. So if we put better questions to it, like, how can I make this better, your brain will go, oh, okay, oh, we're going to do that now? All right, well, let's see. What about this, this, this? And your answers might be complete, you know, let's see, I'm on the radio now, right? They might not be good, but that's okay. It's not so much about the answers at first. It's about the process. It's about putting your brain into that creative, innovative space, and all it takes is a simple question, and your brain will start doing the rest if you get out of its way and let it do its work.
Right, and just think, there was someone back then, apparently Johann Voller, I looked this up, Johann Voller was the one who decided, hey, two pieces of paper need to be able to stick together and then come apart, and he, in Norway, was the inventor of the paperclip. Can you believe that?
You just destroyed one of my fantasies. I had this fantasy, because, you know, I'm just on the phone here, of you just intently listening carefully to every word I'm saying, but instead you just picked up on paperclip and went. That's good, because that's one of the great skills. You're able to multitask.
But as Bill said, put your paper to pen to paper. There we go. Your pencil to paper. Write your list. Find creative ways of taking action and innovating, and perhaps that can help you find some positivity as we all move through this. Because it's all about staying positive, right? And looking for, you know, the paperclip idea.
and taking action. Just the fact of sitting down and answering that question and actually writing down at least three answers, it's taking action. And I've found that whenever you're facing a challenge, if you take any action at all of a sudden you start to feel better, because action creates its own momentum. Sometimes people sit around and wait for inspiration. Well, when I'm inspired, I'll start taking action. No, that's not the way it works. That's not the way it works. Take action, any action at all, and all of a sudden you'll get, you know, it'll just kind of snowball.
It begets more action.
Meanwhile, it's like, what, mid-80s there in the springs today? But you remember snow, because you have it there.
It'll be here soon enough. We had some I think, what was it, early September, right? All right, yeah. 9:47 is our time. You're listening to The Extra here on KRDO News Radio. We have to take a short break. We'll be back again talking to Bill Stanton, our guest for today, about how he's taken the concept of taking action and innovation and applied it to his own career, and what that's meant in this time of pandemic, and also tapping back into, you know, again, our theme for today, which is finding the humor in all of this bleakness. We're right now going to take a short message break, but we'll be back shortly with The Extra. And welcome back to the final segment of The Extra. Today we're focusing on looking for the humor and using it, tapping into it as a way of relieving stress during the pandemic, and also innovation and how by us taking action, we help to bring about that positive feeling that helps me get more take action, taking charge sort of momentum. And then it continues to snowball, as our guest Bill Staton just mentioned. And Bill, you have had reason to innovate in your own life's work because we've mentioned before that you and I met when you were the award-winning producer of a comedy show, a weekly comedy show that aired in the Seattle market. And then at a certain point, that show ended for, you know, economic market reasons. And all of a sudden, you had to reinvent yourself. You had to innovate. You had to look for reasons to start your own list. And you turned to becoming a public speaker, not just any public speaker, a Hall of Fame public speaker. So tell us about, you know, I guess that change in your career and how you looked at making, it wasn't a U-turn, but it was definitely a departure from what your past had been.
Yeah, it was. And by the way, I didn't just start off as a Hall of Fame speaker. You know, become a speaker, and then you get, you know, to a certain point, and at some point they let you into the club. Although I think it was more of an affirmative action thing in my case. But still, yeah. And what happened was, and this might be applicable to your listeners also. When Almost Live ended, this is way back in 1999. When Almost Live ended, by the way, we were still number one in our time slot when it ended. So, but anyway, that's just, I'm not bitter. Just, but at any rate, at first I thought, well, okay, now what am I going to do? You know, and I thought, well, I'm a joke writer. I mean, I'd written for The Tonight Show and that sort of thing. Okay, I can write jokes. I thought, yeah, but there's not much money in that. I was a TV producer, but how many comedy TV shows were there that was, I mean, I didn't want to go into some other kind of producing, and I thought that was all that I could do. I mean, I really thought that was it. I mean, I was focused too laser focused on these are my skill sets, you know, joke writer, that sort of thing. And then I eventually started to kind of branch out and go, wait a minute, what did I learn from my experience? Well, I learned leadership, I learned communication, I learned innovation. These are all marketable. These are all, you know, these are all skill sets that I have from my experience. So I don't have to be, you know, just a joke writer. I don't have to be just a comedy TV producer. I can help people who are in similar situations, not identical situations of having to produce a comedy TV show every week, but having to be an innovative leader, having to lead a creative team, that sort of thing. These are things that I knew how to do. Once I kind of figured that out, then all of a sudden my options broadened a little bit. And I'd started learning a little bit more about the world of professional speaking and thought, well, let's give it a try because, as you know, I mean, I was used to being on camera. I was used to being in front of an audience. And so it seemed kind of a natural fit. And there were some stumbling blocks along the way, of course, but eventually it worked out and, you know, hey, Hall of Fame. So,
but at the same time, this is a world, the public speaking world, where you go around and give speeches to companies, you know, corporations.
Right. This is basically fly around to enclosed groups of lots of people sitting closely together. Yes, that is my career model.
And that world is pretty much blown up right now.
Yeah. How's that working so far? it doesn't exist. So all of a sudden, here we are again. Just like with so many people, you know, the way it was is no longer the way it is. My entire career model blew up because again, it meant getting on airplanes and flying and speaking to enclosed groups of people. And what I had to look back and go, okay, no, that was just a delivery mechanism. Just like the comedy show was just a delivery mechanism for my expertise in innovation and that sort of thing. You know, being on a stage in front of an audience of people, that's just the delivery mechanism. There are other delivery mechanisms. There are, you know, there is Zoom, there's online trainings, there's books, there's things like that. And So for the first month or so, it was like, oh, woe is me, because there goes my entire way of making business. And that's that kind of grieving period we talked about, which is appropriate. But at a certain point, you have to start taking action. And so I started creating online programs. One that I do is called my 20-minute innovation jam session, where people will hire me, teams will hire me to just pop into their weekly team meeting, and in 29 minutes, get them thinking innovatively, get them thinking creatively about a specific issue that they're facing. So it's not getting on stage in front of, 500 or 5,000 people, but it's a way of getting a message across. So part of the thing that I would suggest for other people who are in a situation similar to that, where all of a sudden your world as it was no longer exists, is go, okay, that's just the specifics of the world, but what really is my expertise, and how can I share that? Because there are still ways to share. There's always an innovative way to look at something once you start taking action and looking for it.
And get past that grieving process, like you mentioned. My guest today, it's been a pleasure, Bill, to have you on. Bill Stanton, 29-time Emmy Award winner, and as we mentioned, made it into the Hall of Fame, and it was not...
Did we mention that? Yeah.
We mentioned it a few times, and it was not affirmative action. Don't you go there. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and if you want to find out more, Bill has a blog on his website. You could go to BillStanton.com and look for the blog, and I think you can also find him on Facebook. We'll make sure we get those links up when we have this podcast up on our KRDO News Radio site. So again, to our listeners, thanks for listening, and to our guest today, Bill Stanton, thanks so much for joining us here on The Extra.
Thank you, Shannon. It was a pleasure.